Good morning, Portland, Maine. It is Saturday, April 12th. Welcome to Time Smart Talk with Steve-O. You're listening to News Talk, WLOB, 13 to 10 a.m. We have a very interesting show today. In about 6 minutes or so, we'll have a first guest, who is Sandra Stone. Sandra is the chairwoman of the Maine Angels Investment Network. They do some great work here in Maine in terms of helping entrepreneurs with both investment and advice. And in the second hour, we have Bob Mensinger, who will be talking about journalism in Maine. And I'll mention this at the top of the second hour, but I'll also mention it here. When we recorded the Bob Mensinger interview about a week ago, week and a half ago, he was a guy that came in, did a great interview. And the next day, I hired him as my campaign manager. So although we don't talk about it in the interview because it happened a week ago, I want to let the audience know it's kind of an interesting development. Really looking forward to working with Bob on the campaign. He's a respected journalist and has significant campaign experience. So that'll be in the second hour. So let's do on this day, Shani. We have some interesting things on this day. Starting with on this day of April 12th, 1945, did you know that Franklin D. Roosevelt, 32nd president of the United States, was the only person to be elected to four terms as president?
I did not know that.
He died of a cerebral hemorrage 3 months into his fourth term. And it was after that that folks introduced the 22nd Amendment, which then limited future presidents to a maximum of two consecutive terms. But FDR was around for quite a while. Also on this day, 1961, first man in space, Soviet cosmonaut Yuri Leskovich. You weren't around then, were you, Shani?
No, I was not.
No, I was like two. But in the early 60s, that was one of the space race, which I think is a fascinating period in history. Right after that, President Kennedy came out in a speech and said that he wanted America to land the first person on the moon by the end of the decade. So back in 61, the Soviets basically landed. They didn't even land a guy anywhere. They just flew him in space. And that was something that, you know, America couldn't have. So JFK said, no, by the end of the decade, we're going to put a man on the moon. And at that time, they hadn't even figured out the propulsion systems. Nobody had developed Tang, that delicious orange-flavored drink, the heat shields, all the other stuff. They didn't have the engineering or the computer power, but he basically said, we are going to land a person on the moon, and over the next 9 years, NASA made it happen. That's what American can do when we really put our minds to it, and it's a great example of setting a goal and really getting everyone focused on meeting the same goal. Also on this day, birthdays, 1947, David Letterman, host of The Late Show. He turned 67. He just announced that he's going to retire next year and that Stephen Colbert from The Colbert Report will be taking over. Yeah, David Letterman was just, he's almost like the anti-talk show host. You know, really always enjoyable, always interesting interviews. And so wish him luck as he retires next year. On this day, Ed O'Neill, Al Bundy on Married with Children, also Jay Pritchett on Modern Family. One of my favorite shows. You ever watch Modern Family?
Oh, I love that show.
It's almost like every show has four or five stories in every show that is multi-generational.
Absolutely.
So if you're interested in Jay and his issues as an old guy, there's something there.
Yep.
If you're interested in what's going on with the kids, you got it there.
Yep.
On every level.
Phil is hilarious. The father, Phil.
Oh, yeah. They're all hilarious. Everyone's hilarious. All
yes.
The characters.
Yeah.
1950 on this day, David Cassidy turned 64. He's best known as a teen idol on the Partridge Family. Do we have a little David Cassidy? Wow. You want to hear a fun David Cassidy story?
I'd absolutely love to.
Okay. The year is 1993. The place, Atlanta, Georgia. The person involved in the story, Steve-O.
Okay. I'm with you.
I'm the tournament director of the AT&T Challenge, the largest clay tennis event in North America. It took place every year a week before the French Open, so all the American tennis players would come to the tennis tournament. Andre Agassi, Jimmy Connors, Sampras, Michael Chang won a couple of years. And in that year, I was also a sports agent representing NBA players, Major League Baseball players, and I had represented Dave Justice, who was a Rookie of the Year with the Atlanta Braves, and he was married to Halle Berry. So I invited Dave Justice to come to the tennis event as my guest. That week, he was named by People magazine as the world's sexiest man.
Oh, yeah.
Right. So one of the tennis players that year, a guy named Malavia Washington, great tennis player, the year before or something, he was named one of America's sexiest men. And on this one day in 1993, it could have been 92 or 93, David Cassidy was in a show in Atlanta, and his PR person called up and said, David Cassidy wants to come to the tennis tournament.
Oh, cool.
And I said, I'd love to have him as my guest. So, and I grew up watching the Partridge Family. That's Susan Day. She was something. So he came, and at one point in time, Dave Justice, sexiest man in the world, David Cassidy, and Steve-O, we were at a table, and I stuck out like a sore thumb.
Oh, stop it.
Oh, yeah, I did. But anyhow, I spent 3 hours with David Cassidy, you know, talking about Partridge Family in Atlanta. That's a fun fact to know. Hey, why don't we get right to the first guest? We recorded this yesterday, so we will fade into our interview with Sandra Stone, who's the chairwoman for the Maine Angels Investment Network. You're listening to Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O, News Talk WLOB, 1310 AM. Listen to Tide Smart Talk with Steve on News Talk WLOB, 1310 AM. That's Juice Newton. Just call me Angel. We actually have an angel in the studio. Please join me welcoming Sandra Stone. She is the chairwoman of the Maine Angels Investment Network. Welcome, Sandra.
Welcome.
Have you ever been introduced with Just Call Me Angel?
No, this is great.
Nice theme song, isn't it?
It's terrific.
You may want to use it on your voicemail. Just Call Me Angel. So happy to have you here. You know, we talk about Maine's economy, and we talk about jobs and opportunity for different people here in so many different ways, and the work that you're doing and the work that the Maine Angels Investment Network is doing is so interesting. But before we get into that, I'd like to start with a little bit of the background of the guest. So if you could talk a little bit about the early years and where you grew up, and then we'll talk about how you ended up coming to Maine, and then we'll talk about what you're doing with Maine Angels.
Well, I grew up and went to high school, all the way through high school, in Evanston, Illinois, which is where Northwestern University is. So when I was looking at colleges, I decided that I would want to explore something a little further from home, and kind of decided that Maine sounded like an interesting place. I looked at Colby and Bowdoin as well as Colorado. And
had you been here before, or was it something that just resonated?
I actually, when I was selecting colleges, was looking at some interesting calendar logistics. I looked at Colorado College, which studies one course at a time for three and a half weeks, and then you do your next subject.
Wow.
And Colby has an interesting 414 program, and my high school counselor at the time said, Maine? You ought to look at Bowdoin. Never heard of it. If you're going to look at Colby, you got to look at Bowdoin. And it just really was the place. I thought, if I'm 1,200 miles from home, this is, I think, where I want to go.
And as it turned out, what was your experience like at Bowdoin, coming from a different part of the country? And, you know, it's a great school, and they've done some great things, but I'm guessing you had a great experience?
Yes, I did. I did my junior year away, abroad. I did a European and a sort of an Asian junior year, which I think was important for me because it was a fairly small school. My graduating class was about 1,500 students. I went to a public high school that was 5,200. So Bowdoin was smaller than my graduating class. So I was looking for that smaller interaction and love the campus and still go up to the Maine State Music Theater every summer.
It's beautiful up there. I think that here in Maine, not only does the state have a unique environment relative to the ocean and the mountains and all that, but the universities that we have, the campuses themselves are kind of living, breathing academic environments where, you know, every time I drive through Bowdoin or Colby, I feel a little smarter. It just feels like the buildings, the environment, the rolling hills, it's inspiring. And I think that that's one of the reasons why, in terms of education, where we'll never go completely to virtual education or online, because being in an environment that fosters curiosity and creativity and kind of communal interaction, you know, for me personally, I think that's part of education.
Well, it definitely is a community sort of thing. I understand that with the more distances within Maine, you've got to not always be thinking bricks and mortar, but they're looking at a lot of really interesting things in education now with distance learning and having libraries be the site where you can go and be with other people as you're learning things.
Right. So after going to school in Bowdoin, so you were still, I don't want to say a young kid, but you graduated Bowdoin, your family and everyone's back in Illinois. So what was the genesis for staying, or did you go somewhere else after graduating and then ultimately come back to Maine?
Let's see. I guess I did have a sort of a startup situation with a friend who was very theatrically oriented. I had more of the sort of business economics background. My degree was economics, but we didn't have business at Bowdoin. And we started a theater company down in Greenwich, Connecticut. He was looking to me to sell the marketing ads in the program, figure out how we're going to price it. So that was sort of a fun thing to do. And then came up, got a job offer in Maine from what was then Canal Bank, now Key Bank.
Oh, great.
And that kind of brought me back, plus the my son's dad was a Bowdoin student that I met, and that kind of anchored me here when we got married.
Well, fantastic. That's our gain. Anytime we can be a net importer of young people graduating from the colleges and working here, that's a big plus for Maine. So let's talk about the organization Maine Angels. And if you can give an overview for listeners that may not be familiar with the history of the investment network, the kind of the organizational structure, and then we'll talk about some of the programs and some of the process and some of the work you've done. But how is it founded? When was it founded? And how is it set up as an organization?
I think it was originally founded by Charles Sidman, who's up in Bar Harbor. Back in, I believe it was 2003, there were several, I think a handful of about four or five investors that thought they wanted to do something particularly focused in investing in small startup companies in Maine. Their first investment was in 2004. I think they made three in 2004, didn't make any in 2005. And we, according to our bylaws, you have a four-year term as the chair. And at the end of the 4 years, I'm only the third chair. So Chris Spey took over at that point, and Charlie is no longer involved in the organization. He has started a fund of his own that's up in Bar Harbor and tried to get investors to go invest in that. But people were more interested in being a little bit hands-on. We're a Maine Angel investor typically is either a successfully exited entrepreneur or somebody who's done well in business, or perhaps in a family business and legacy that is interested to be more hands-on and involved and sort of still keeping their fingers in without having to do the 60 to 80 hours a week themselves.
Boy, if you can let me know how I can get to do that, that sounds great. By the way, you're listening to Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O on News Talk WLAB 1310 AM. So how many people are Maine Angels? And by the way, the website for anyone interested is www.maineangels.org. And so when people think of Maine Angels, when I was first introduced to the organization, I thought, well, there's some wealthy investors that also have an interest or a commitment to giving back. Is it like Shark Tank, which I think people may be familiar with on television, where you've got Mark Cuban and the other people, and people come before them with ideas, and they decide? That's kind of a game show format. But can you describe the process of Maine Angels and how it works in your experience as being the chairwoman?
Okay. Well, back when I first became chair, we had about 30 members. I was on a personal mission to bring in more female members. It was myself and one other woman pretty much around the table. And we have now grown to 71 members in the last 2.5 years. I now have 10 female members, so we're at about 14%, which I think is pretty good.
Great.
And I would say that in comparison to Shark Tank, which appears as though you see them get a presentation for 10 minutes and then they make a decision of millions of dollars of their own money that they're going to invest, we're probably, that would be more like a super angel. We invest as a group, but all individually. So each person makes their own decision as to whether they want to go in on a particular deal. And we have a volunteer deal lead who becomes the liaison with the entrepreneur and handles all interaction, communication questions, setting up meetings so that they don't have to deal with anywhere from 3 to 15 investors that might be, oh, I want to go for coffee and find out what's going on.
So, I mean, let's drill down on maybe one of the recent deals. I don't think, depending on if you're comfortable or not naming the specific product or business, or you could talk about it generally as a hypothetical, but on one of the deals that would be presented to the main angels, if the group decides that it's worthy of investment, what's the next step? Do some of the angels put money in? Is it set up as owning a percentage of equity or net revenue? Do the angels have a controlling interest ever? Because I think the idea of taking both capital and expertise of people we have in Maine and injecting that into an entrepreneurial environment is a great one. But how does it work technically relative to maybe, you know, describing a case study of something recent that came before the main angels and how the process worked? And then we'll talk a little bit on a bigger picture, what kind of returns and how it's worked historically.
Okay, well, I guess I could speak probably generically. We use an online platform called GUST, G-U-S-T. And that is sort of the industry standard investment management online platform. It's provided to us as part of our membership dues that we pay to the Angel Capital Association, which is the national. And so we have an online application that an entrepreneur would go on to our site, fill in that application, which will make sure that we're comparing apples to apples. It won't allow you to submit it until you've put all the required pieces in place. Some are required and some are optional, things like a video. And we have a screening session that we do 10 days before our monthly meeting, at which time we look at all applications that come in and decide, we rate them. You know, is this an A, a B, a no, we're going to pass, or no, they don't seem quite ready, or can somebody follow up on this and get more information?
Typically, are there more products or more services, or is it just equal in terms of the types of submissions that you get?
It varies sometimes each month. Sometimes it seems like it's more internet software, big data, and other times there'll be, right now we're seeing a lot of bioscience because we have several new retired docs. Particularly, we've started a sort of subgroup up in the Bangor area, and one of our members is very active in recruiting his other fellow doctors. And it seems like lately we've been getting quite a few, either pharmaceuticals or life science ones.
Great. So the online platform, GUST, it allows you to kind of standardize the process. So, you know, some of it's quantifiable information, I'm guessing. How long is the business in? What kind of debt do you have? What expenses? And then some of it's probably qualitative and subjective. What are your plans? What's your marketing scope? That type of thing.
Yes.
And then does it go before all of – and when you get together, do you refer to each other as angels? I'm kidding. Is it like, Angel Bob, good to see you. Same to Angel. Because it's good work you're doing. It just seems like it's a fun name of the group too, right? Angels?
Oh, I think the whole concept of angel investing came from the theater. They used to have
On Broadway.
Investors that would come in and, you know, finance.
It was
productions.
Part of the mythology of Broadway. And many of the, in the case of Broadway, many of them were, you know, I'm sure there were successes and great home runs, but many of the times it was, you know, for the love of the theater, and people probably didn't get their investment back. So
Yeah. Well, and there's that. I always say to people, it's a little bit like baseball. If somebody's batting 300, you think that's great.
Right.
And it's very high risk, which is why usually you think of an angel investor as being a high net worth individual. They have to be an accredited investor and meet certain minimum amounts of either income or asset base.
So it wouldn't be someone where if somebody was on a fixed income, they wouldn't be risking, you know, their livelihood. There's mechanisms in the organization to make sure that people are aware and they know the risk and they can afford to make an investment. And if it doesn't pan out, it wouldn't, hopefully cripple them financially.
It's one of the requirements that they have to be an accredited investor by the SEC criteria.
Okay. So a person fills out the form. You meet periodically, review them, grade them in terms of viability. And then at what point are there live presentations or interactions and that type of thing?
All right. So the screening session, usually anywhere from 5 to sometimes 15 members will be at the sessions, depending on their interest in some of the deals that have come through. We pick what we think are our top 3, possibly sometimes we've done 4, sometimes we've done only 1 or 2, and we invite those entrepreneurs to come in and make their pitch. And they're given 10 minutes to do a presentation, usually with a PowerPoint, and then we have a 10-minute Q&A, and then they're excused, and we go into our sort of executive session and decide, is there interest? Do you have concerns? Do you have questions? Who liked this? Who didn't? Who's interested? And as long as I can get 3 people that are interested and one of them agrees to be the deal lead, we would probably move forward a little bit more.
What are typically the financial ranges of investment, you know, from lemonade stand being, you know, on the low end potentially of to biotech or something more capital extensive? You know, is there a sweet spot or are there parameters that you set up as an organization to consider $2,000, $10,000, $1 million? What are the scopes parameters for the main angels?
I'd say that our average investment per deal by a member would be around $25,000. We actually have an expectation that every member will invest $20,000 a year. So they certainly can go lower. Sometimes it's the entrepreneur who makes that minimum unit investment requirement. I would say our sweet spot tends to be that we raise around $250,000 for an entrepreneur. Anybody that was looking for probably less than $100,000, it would not be probably a good angel investment. There's other resources out there that would be better for them.
By the way, we have Sandra Stone. She is the chief angel, also known as the chairwoman for the Maine Angels Investment Network. Their website is www.maineangels.org. So if anyone listening has a business or has a relative or a friend that may be seeking some sort of investment of both capital and expertise, I think Maine Angels is a great place to go. Are there any case studies that you can talk about specifically over the last 10 years that have already been kind of publicly discussed that would be a business or a service that has gone through the Maine Angels network where it's a success story where the angels invested X and it turned into like IDEX or Unum or anything like that? Those would be big examples, but are there any examples so you know the public may relate to? Or
one, just because I was just at the Launchpad competition last night, and the winner last year of Launchpad was Pika Energy, which does personal individual wind power and a unit that you can also feed in solar power at the same time, which is one of the features that really makes them unique. And they were one that came to us through the Top Gun program, which is run out of the incubator on Maine Center for Entrepreneurial Development. And so working with those kinds of feeder programs that help us identify some of these new leading edge kinds of businesses, they came to us. We invested in them. They also got some investment from MTI, Maine Technology Institute, and from what was then Small Enterprise Growth Fund, now Maine Venture Fund. So we did some collaboration with that. And they're now in their 4th raise. They got the Launchpad money and have won some other significant competition dollars. And they're doing exceedingly well. With the $30,000 they got from the Launchpad, they moved out of the entrepreneur's basement and into an actual industrial space in Westbrook.
I don't know. Basement businesses and garage businesses have great mythology. You know, whether it's Apple Computer or some of the other, if I was starting out today, I'd want to stay in the basement in the garage as long as possible and take lots of pictures, so that when you explode on the scene, you have visual evidence of the mythology. How does it work when you do decide to invest, in terms of generally every deal may be different, but is it an equity position? Is it formatted some other way? And obviously you have to be compliant in terms of an investment vehicle. So can you explain the technical elements of how main angel investors are able to connect the businesses in a way that and how it's structured?
Okay. I guess one of the things that I always try and make sure people understand is that we also, unlike Shark Tank, you don't see any research or follow-up or reference checking. We do a pretty thorough due diligence process where we, you know, take some independent assessment of where we think the market's going. We do some reference checks on the team. We do a little bit of hardcore into the projections. I mean, if they've got themselves budgeted for a $300,000 salary at year two, we sort of say, you know, this is just not realistic for something that we're interested to invest in. You proceed to a term sheet to do some negotiations. Most of the time, we would be looking for an equity position. Sometimes it's a preferred equity position. There often is a situation where you can't come to terms exactly on your pre-money valuation, and you think there's going to be a larger raise down the line, and we will take a convertible debt situation with a discount to whatever is established at that larger dollar raise valuation.
And since 2003 or since 2004, when Main Angel Network started, do you have any aggregate numbers in terms of how much has been raised and invested, and any kind of history in terms of return on investment? And again, I look at, you know, in this context, investment and return on investment is both financial and opportunity and kind of non-tangible in terms of helping people in the state. But what type of track record does Main Angels have?
Well, we don't have a big Google or an IDEX explosion, but I think that we've done over $11 million worth of investment. We had a great year back in 2012 when we did $3.3 million in just that 1 year. In 21 deals, I believe 8 or 9 of those were in new companies. A lot of that was follow-on, which is when we invest in an existing portfolio company. And that put us sort of on the map for the ACA does a annual survey called the Halo Report. And we were number 10 in terms of deal activity when people were like, wow, there's a Main Angel group. What do you know?
Right.
So that was exciting. In terms of actual deals, I think we've had over 40 companies that we're invested in. It's like I said, you don't. Some of those are strikeouts. We have not yet had that home run. We've had returns with royalty, both interest, dividend, and there's several right now that are being poised for either exits by strategic buyout or even one that's looking with an investment banker that's trying to do some sort of a possible IPO.
We have Sandra Stone. She is the chairwoman of Main Angels Investment Network. It's a group of people that get together and would you describe it as an investment group? As it wouldn't be philanthropy because you're expecting a return.
Yes.
But how would you describe it as a group? Because you're fostering the entrepreneurial spirit. You're giving advice, business advice. You know, how do you?
We're not a formal corporation. We are a membership network, and each individual member makes their own investment decisions. So it's not just a group thumbs up, thumbs down, and we don't have a fund at this time.
So some individuals go in for a different percent, and then you just aggregate the percent, and then everyone has a prorated share of the good, the bad?
Well, out of the 71 members in any one deal, you might have anywhere from 5 to 15 of those members invest, but it is not a situation where every single person that's a member would invest.
Talk about it looks like for about 5 years, you were part of the Maine Center for Entrepreneurial Development, MCED. What is the linkage between what Maine Angels are doing and what that group is doing in terms of trying to develop entrepreneurialism here in Maine?
Well, I think that connection, and also the fact that now Don Gooding is the executive director there and he is the vice chair at Maine Angels, has made it work extremely well for our group. I tend to be the one that goes outside of Maine to make the connections with the other angel groups. We're part of the ACA New England. There's over 21 angel groups, so that we can now syndicate deals. So as I said, we tend to do around a $250,000 round. And if an entrepreneur is looking for $750,000, I might reach out to Launchpad, Boston Harbor, Cherry Stone, say, gee, this sounds like it might be something you're interested in. We've done the diligence. We really like what we see and we're excited and we need to raise some more money. Are you interested to be in on that? Which keeps us plugged in and visible with other groups outside of Maine. And then Don brings the fact that with what he interacts with the entrepreneurs in Maine, both through his Top Gun and his virtual incubator, is funneling potential prospects to us that are saying, wow, I think you ought to apply to Maine Angels. And we're always looking for good, solid deals, particularly in Maine.
Are there industries, and obviously technology is kind of a fertile business genre now, but do the Maine Angels ever sit down and say, here are the different business segments that we want to really concentrate on, or are you fairly agnostic where you're open to agriculture, technology, manufacturing, anything like that, or biotech, or is there kind of a policy platform of what types of business you would consider investing in?
No. So some of the groups, particularly down in Boston, get very specialized. You have Mass Medical Angels that only do medical and bioscience. You'll have the Golden Seeds Group, which only invests in female entrepreneurs. You have several of the groups that won't do consumer goods. Some of them will only do technology. We tend to find that in Maine, because our industrial sectors and agriculture is not one we tend to do very much with. We've had one of our early investments in a food company did not do so well, so I think people are a little skittish of that one. But it tends to be what the expertise is of our members, and if it resonates with any of our members and they feel they have something to bring to the party, to the table, to evaluate or analyze whether this has a good shot of making it or not, we'll take a look at it. And sometimes something might be a really strong opportunity, but because we don't have the expertise that we can bring to evaluate that, we're not comfortable doing those.
Okay, we have Sandra Stone. You're also principal of Seacoast Solutions, focusing on connections, strategic linkages with the innovation and entrepreneurial community with intentional focus on female entrepreneurship. Talk a little bit about the gender nuance of female entrepreneurship versus male. Is it something where you're just focusing in that area because for years women may have under-indexed in the entrepreneurial realm, or for your personal interest in the business of Seacove? Talk a little bit about your perspective on that and what we can and should do in Maine to get more women involved in terms of business here in Maine.
Well, I think some of your most successful female entrepreneurs will say that gender does not play a part as much as it's having the connections and the networking and the same kind of personality and character traits that somebody that's going to be, you know, just relentless in pursuing their idea, passionate, and really focused and able to do that. I think what my interest in trying to work with, when I can, female entrepreneurs is that I think in general, our social cultural upbringing is one that sort of makes women feel less comfortable dealing with numbers, math, business, profit. Whenever I talk to women that I think might be potential investors in our group, they always go, oh, is that a philanthropy? Is that a nonprofit? And I'm like, no, we're here for making some profit return as well as helping out these businesses. And they get very uncomfortable with the concept. So I would like to see it be something that is accessible to women who have ideas and don't yet feel the confidence. And I think that particularly for some women, it's easier to talk to another woman who they feel they can then have that more comfortable conversation with. And women, it's about the relationships and the values that they bring. And I think other women may tend to welcome and understand that in a different way.
And how does that translate, whether it has to do with Maine Angels or in business in general? You mentioned, to paraphrase, cultural either bias or cultural history. I would love to see more women involved in everything. There are a number of groups in Maine. There's a group, Emerge, that I think focuses on the issue from a political standpoint, getting more women involved in local government and getting involved in the political process, and whether it's your interest in creating more opportunities for women to be involved. And is there something that can be done from a policy standpoint? Is there something that can be done, you know, how do we make more advances? Because everyone talks about the glass ceiling, the pay inequality, whether it's 77 cents or some other number, that it would certainly appear that there's some work that needs to be done in a lot of fronts relative to women enjoying the same opportunities and the same recognition and the same compensation and benefits as men. From your experience and from your significant experience in both business and education, do you see anything that we should be doing in society, or we should be doing anything from a policy standpoint in state or federal government to help, or is it something that just has to evolve further?
Wow. I'm not much of a policy wonk. So I think one of the other groups that I'll give a shameless plug for is a group that was a spinoff of the Maine Women's Fund, which is called Women Standing Together for Both Entrepreneurship and Leadership. And what we're looking at is that one of the key components is there is that sort of good old boy network, and not that they don't also invite and welcome women in, but I think there's something about this whole mentoring relationship, that having somebody you can go to that is really a safe place to say, wow, I just really think I messed up with this, and what do I do now, or how do I fix that, or have you ever experienced that? And it feels, I think, safer for some women to do that with other women. And so this has been a really powerful program that we work with entrepreneurs, bringing them into a roundtable luncheon and have sometimes as many as 40 or 50 women in the room. And the whole focus is on how can we help this one individual entrepreneur. And they say it is an incredible experience. Something like that. I think there are right now very attractive programs out there to try and focus on female business owners, and I've seen some businesses actually make sure that they bring a woman into their sort of C-suite to make sure that they could become eligible for some of that kinds of funding. That's going to help encourage and make those kinds of possibilities happen. I think it's like anything. There's so many women out there that are now becoming heads of households, that are actually making the purchasing decisions and are doing many of the investments, and as they get more comfortable with it. And I think young people today don't see those same sort of barriers and inequalities that maybe we did as we were growing up.
I agree. In fact, just this week we hosted here at TideSmart the Yarmouth Falmouth, I think Cumberland was also part of it, women's networking event. I wasn't able to attend. I was out of town on business, but I think we had 30 local business women here doing a networking event and sharing ideas in terms of work best practices and networking, and I think that's important. Talk a little bit about, you know, you're not a Mainer technically, because unless you're born here, you're not allowed, but you've certainly been.
Yeah, I'm not even sure my son qualifies.
I know. I think, you know, there's that kind of parochial view that if you're not born here, but I was in like a U.S. Senate debate or something with someone years ago, and they were say, well, Steve, you weren't a Mainer. And I asked the person how long they had been here in Maine, and they were born. There was like a 25-year-old person. She goes, I was born here 25 years ago and stuff. And I said, well, I think that's great that you were born here. But 14 years ago, I may not have been born here, but I made a number of choices. I made a choice to relocate my family here. I made a choice to start a business here. I made a choice to invest. And I don't know. I think that's valid, too. And so I personally think some of that parochial, well, if you're not born here, you're not a Mainer. I think anyone who makes the decision to be here, to support our state, to support our economy, and to support each other personally and civic involvement, you know, we're all Mainers. That's my view. That's where I'd go with that. But we'll probably get a few letters from that. But talk about, in a general sense here in Maine, everyone talks about small businesses really being an important economic catalyst in Maine. We don't have core industries like they may have outside of Boston. They may not be tech or biotech or medical. So here in Maine, more so than most places around the country, our economy is made up in terms of small industries and micro businesses and small businesses that all fit under kind of the entrepreneurial umbrella. What do you see from your experience? We have Sandra Stone. She's the chairwoman of the Maine Angels Investment Network. Do you see, relative to our future growth, do you see greater consolidation or density of business areas so we attract larger businesses? Or do you feel from your experience that Maine is both destined and it's a positive thing that if we continue to be kind of incubator for small businesses, that that's a path for some success here in the state?
Well, I think that we've done a great job in Maine of helping. We have micro businesses are very plentiful. I think what we need to do a better job of is trying to figure out how to help some of those small businesses become more than just a one or two or three person shop. It's that sort of in-between next phase, which really allows there to be some growth without wrecking the place. I do think that we're in the beginnings of a really exciting nourishment of that sort of innovation, entrepreneurial spirit that I think has always been part of what Maine was all about. They've got something coming in June. There's going to be a whole 10-day period, the Maine Startup and Create Week, which is going to start with Entreverge, which was, I think, a Propel out of the Portland Chamber. It's the young persons group, and they award a electric guitar to the 5 winners that they select out of the people that apply for that sort of a it's like a pitch competition. And then there's the startup weekend that they're doing that weekend. We're going to have an event for angel investors, an education kind of thing. There's people coming from all over. The fact that this is going to be happening in Maine as our first inaugural time, and we're bringing in people from Boston and at a national level and kind of putting Maine once again on the map is, I think, hopefully getting us to the point that we will see we're not that far from Boston, and our quality of life that we offer them is an entrepreneur is exciting, and there are the resources here that can help.
I've been saying that. You just said exactly what I've been saying for years. I grew up in Boston. Every time I go back and I travel back on 128 and you see the incredible development in the multi-billion dollar economy just on 128 coming back up to Maine. If we could figure out, and what Maine has is open space and quality of life, if we could be a virtual annex, an economic annex, and take some of that density pressure off areas of Boston, that would be a billion-dollar infusion to our economy right there. And I agree completely. We need to come up with a plan for that. Because we have some really, I've had last year Susan McKay of Sierra Helix. I think she was one of your investment receivers. I can't even explain the scientific stuff that they do up there because it's so advanced and so cool. Jackson Labs, Bigelow Labs, Backyard Farms is doing cool things in hydroponic growing with tomatoes. We have obviously the seafood industry and traditional industries in Maine. But when you look around and you see some of the small pockets of expertise, in the event that you mentioned last night, one of, is it pronounced?
Chimani.
They were one of the nominees and doing a national park app. How cool is that? So we have bright people who want to be in Maine for the quality of life, whether it's snow in the winter or the ocean in the summer or lobster all the time and blueberries all the time. We have an incredible quality of life environment. And we just, are there any policy issues that you see? I know you mentioned you're not a policy wonk, but I do see here that, you know, when you graduated from Bowdoin, you had a degree in economics and political science, magna cum laude. So you can't say that you're not, you know, the poli sci degree doesn't lie right there. By the way, we have Sandra Stone here. She's the chairwoman for the Maine Angels Investment Network, great group that's not only providing capital, but also expertise from various businesses here in Maine that you can learn more at maineangels.org. But are there any policy issues that you think on a macro level would make Maine a more fertile environment for people doing business, starting business, and bringing in business from outside?
Well, we're pretty excited that the legislature has decided to bring back the Maine State Seed Capital Tax Credit. This was a credit that for pre-authorized companies in particular geographic areas could attract investments that we say on a $100,000 investment, you'd get over 3 years, 60% credit against your on your taxes, so that it would mean that the return on that investment you weren't putting as much at risk, so that a smaller return was actually more attractive. And it was the year that we actually did our most volume was when that was being reaching the final ceiling. And so the fact that they're bringing that back, we're only going to have a very small amount this year. I think only about $500,000 this year. But there's a waiting period that people were doing sort of like, well, are they going to bring it back? I don't want to invest right now. So that I think is going to be an attractive.
Do you think that'll be ongoing policy? You said they're bringing it back, but at a smaller level. And Should that be something that is looked at as more of a long-term strategy, do you think, in terms of the state legislature?
Well, I think the one of the really great things is that they have decided to make it an annual cap versus a one-time permanent cap, so that it will mean that every year this will renew at a slightly I should know the number. Several of my members are more experts in this than I am. But it is one of the things I think is really attractive that is being done right now. I think there's a big concern about education and making sure that we're getting the educated workforce that is needed by bringing in these businesses that are looking for more tech savvy and experienced employees. I was at the Envision Maine breakfast the other day, and Susan Corbett was their speaker, and she's put broadband into Washington County and is trying to bring in high school students so that they can learn some of the skills that are going to be needed in today's contemporary businesses that are looking for those that aren't just trying to learn Excel spreadsheets. They grew up with that sort of thing.
Right. You're listening to Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O on News Talk WLOB 1310 AM. In the next minute or two, as we finish up here, and by the way, you need to come back as a guest again. We've only scratched the surface here. This is fantastic. A couple things. You were recognized as a 2013 Maine Biz Woman to Watch, which I think is great for your work involving capital investment. But let's switch gears a little bit and talk about tennis. So in addition to all your work as a Maine Angels investment network person, is the chairwoman of that, in addition to your work with Seacove Solutions, you have been the girls' tennis team coach at Falmouth High School, looks like for the last 11 years, and you've won 8 Class B State of Maine championships. 8 out of 11, is that right?
Yes.
So that almost doesn't seem fair. So,
well, I think some of the competition would say that.
I know, but 8 out of 11, a couple things. Is it time to move up to Class A?
They actually are moving us up to Class A for the playoffs this year.
Really? So talk a little bit about, is this driven by your personal interest in tennis? I've been involved in education for years, and I was an adjunct professor for years, and being involved in schools or colleges, and in your case, athletics, for me, was always one of the joys, being around kids and a positive. I'd love to be a tennis coach. So talk a little bit about how that worked out in terms of your career path and helping out at Falmouth High School as the tennis coach.
Well, I was an avid tennis player. At one point, I was playing probably three or four times a week. I was part of a team that represented the New England section at Nationals. I was a singles player. I belonged to the Woodlands Club and was chair of the tennis committee. And the pro there said, I think you ought to throw your hat in the ring. I've got some players that are going to be going up into the high school program, and the coach doesn't even play tennis. And I'm like, well, I don't think I can do that. And he's like, you know, you've done substitute teaching. You're a mom. You know, wow. You've played. You've gone to Nationals. You've certainly taken lessons with me. You can do this. So I went and interviewed for the position, and they told me I would have probably 12 to 15 girls, and I had 25 sign up. And I thought, I've never done this before. So, you know, you just kind of go with it. The pro at the Woodlands was definitely good about helping me learn some of the drills that I could have the girls do. And it wasn't hard to improve on a record that was 3-21. We were 9-3 our first year. So the second year, my target was to just make it into the semifinals of the playoffs, which we did. And the third year, I told the girls, all right, this year I want the finals at the regional finals. And they're like, mm-mm, coach. And I'm like, why? They said, we want it all. We want to win the states. And I said, then I want, when I tell you to run, you're going to run. And when I tell you to do dynamic stretching, you're going to, yeah, coach, we will. And they did it. We were 16-0 that year.
Wow. And are you in the middle of the season now? When is the season here?
Yeah,
in,
I'm in my end of my second week, and I've got 25 girls, and we look pretty strong for next year.
Pretty strong. So how long is it? When would the playoffs be, and what is the timing for the season?
Well, it starts the end of March, is when you first are allowed to have contact with the athletes. And playoffs start, I believe it's like the first weekend in June, and the state championship will be, I think it's the 14th.
Wow. Wish you nothing. But before we went on the air, I mentioned to you that I was a tournament director for the ATP, the men's tour, in the early 90s. And we'll get together again, and I'll tell you the time that Jimmy Connors stole one of the tournament cars. Interesting guy. Or the time that Andre Agassi had his, at the time, girlfriend Brooke Shields come into the players' lounge and caused a bit of a stir. Chrissy Evert or Martina Navratilova, who did you identify with as a better player in terms of your style?
Probably Chrissy Evert.
Yeah, she was America's darling.
Yeah.
Except for that back to Jimmy Connors thing. Anyhow. Hey, thank you so much for coming in. I'd love to have you come back more and talk about what's going on in Maine in terms of entrepreneurship and people being more involved and getting more women involved in business, and also your commitment to girls' tennis, women's tennis here in Falmouth. I think that's great.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
This is great. This was we've had Sandra Stone here. She's the chairwoman for the Maine Angels Investment Network. She's also a woman to watch, 2013 Maine Business Woman to Watch. And her tennis team is dominating Class B state tennis. They're moving up to Class A, apparently, in the playoffs. And you've been listening to Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O on News Talk WLOB 1310 AM. We'll be right back.